This is the Secrets of Attorney Marketing podcast from Speakeasy Marketing. Discover how to enhance your reputation as an attorney and outmarket your competitors. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and post a review.
Okay, this is Tracy Murda with Speakeasy Marketing and Secrets of Attorney Marketing. Today I have a wonderful guest with me. It's attorney Jim Baer of Baer and Trost, also of counsel at Glaser Weil in California. Thanks for joining me today, Jim. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, and thank you, Tracy, and thank you, Speakeasy.
Jim, you have an interesting background in that you came from a large firm and decided to open your own practice. Tell me a little bit about Baer and Trost and who are the players. What got you started?
What got me started, Tracy, was the search for sophisticated law, but also having a balanced life and balanced approach. Coming out of the big law firm environment, there's high overhead and very little flexibility with respect to trying to raise a family and have a balance. And I've always been somebody who has tried to deliver high-quality legal services, but at the same time, I did not want to miss my children growing up, and I wanted to have an opportunity to kind of make the world a better place and do some nonprofit work as well. So I found the, quote, big firm environment as opposed to the small firm environment less flexible.
What areas of the law does Baer and Trost LLP handle?
So, excellent question. We specialize in what I would call the middle market corporate law as well as sophisticated business litigation. But what we've grown into is kind of the one-stop place for the middle market, meaning what we try to do because we are big firm-trained, experienced people is we try to partner with our clients and essentially solve their business challenges. So when I meet someone and I have a relationship, for instance, that's lasted for years, I don't want them feeling that I'm not their first call. So if they have a business challenge, whether or not it's they want to buy a company, sell a company, raise financing, or they want to collect money from someone that owes them money, or they want to defend a lawsuit they're in, or if they're going through a restructuring and they need to figure out what is the best way to restart or shut down their company, I want to capture that business because I've got the relationship, and because I'm an expert in those areas, I want the call. So whether or not it's through Baer and Trost or my relationship with Glaser Weil, which is a middle market, high-end law firm that does high-end litigation and real estate work as well as corporate for bigger things, or CMBG Advisors, Inc., which is a restructuring company that I also run, I want that call so that I can essentially assess what the person or company needs and how I best can help them.
And Jim, you mentioned, or I mentioned, I should say, that both you and Attorney Trost both started with major, larger law firms, correct?
Eric and I met together the first day in law school, and I went to Gibson Dunn, and he went to Music Peeler, and we essentially collectively had years in the big firm environment, and coincidentally, we got to a point in our life where we wanted to combine forces and take that knowledge and essentially build a middle market firm.
So how did that background that you both came from, how did that really shape your vision for starting your own private practice?
I think that what I realized in the corporate world is that you're dealing often with very complex, challenging situations, and it's not one size fits all. So, for instance, if you need a heart surgeon, you don't look at a billboard on the freeway and call 1-800-HEART-SURGEON, whereas if it's a slip and fall, you may call that PI that's advertising. I realized a long time ago that marketing in the old traditional way does not work because people don't want somebody that kind of is just a one-stop, you know, shop, hey, you know, cram it in there. People want IQ and they want experience. And so Eric and I learned from the big firm experience that there is no substitute for, quote, rolling up your sleeves and knowing what the heck you're talking about. But by the same token, if you surround yourself with bright people, manage your overhead, you can keep your rates down and attract sophisticated clients, but that essentially are more cost conscious.
So tell me a little bit about your career path, sort of the pros and cons of practicing law with a large firm versus a small firm of your own.
Well, first of all, lawyers are typically risk adverse. So one of the advantages of a big firm is you have a sense of security. You get a paycheck. You get a paycheck from a big firm. You don't have to be a rainmaker. You get up in the morning, you go in, you get given work typically, and if you bill your hours and you keep your head down and you're smart and you work hard, you know, that's all you have to really do. And that's an oversimplification, but that's the key. When you go out on your own, you really kind of eat what you kill, and you are responsible for your destiny. But having said that, I'm not reportable to anybody. I am accountable to my clients, but at the end of the day, I have more flexibility. But if there's no money in the bank account, I'm not getting a paycheck. So you have to be willing to live with that uncertainty, and so I think it does take a little more faith.
I mean, starting any business, of course, is usually a pretty tough and risky venture. How did you guys survive the early months?
The key is, and this is true for small businesses, the number one thing that kills small businesses is underestimating your expenses and overestimating your revenue. And so you have to know realistically what you can count on from clients. And, of course, there's a leap of faith. But you need to talk to your clients and know who will come with you and who won't. And you have to figure out what kind of overhead you can realistically afford. For instance, do you work out of home for a period of time? Do you need a fancy office? I don't think people need fancy offices in this virtual world. I'm sitting here right now looking out over the Pacific, and yes, we have nice offices, but it's really more for me than my clients. And at the end of the day, for years, I didn't have as nice an office. So you have to manage your overhead and manage expectations and really kind of know which clients are going to come with you and which ones won't so that you kind of don't get overextended.
I love that. I'm just sitting here picturing the Pacific Ocean right now. So real quick, what are do's and don'ts of starting a law firm?
Good question. The do's are, as we talked about, having a realistic vision and really not being naive about what goes into it. So having some experience, throwing your backpack over the wall, meaning you have to commit to it, but really doing your homework, having a budget, knowing are you doing it by yourself, are you doing it with a partner, and if you do it with a partner, you're only as good as the ethics of the partner. It's like a marriage. You really have to know who you're getting into bed with, and so do your homework with your partner, make sure it's somebody that really doesn't have addiction issues, that has integrity, that really is going to be there for you in the same way you candidly would pick a spouse, so or a significant other. So I think you really have to do your homework. In terms of the don'ts, I think it's kind of the reverse of that. You jump in without doing your homework. You associate with people that you shouldn't be associating with, and you essentially overestimate your revenue and underestimate your expenses. So go in with a vision and a plan. Find out what malpractice insurance is going to cost. Find out what rent's going to be. Find out who's going to join you and who isn't. Find out what lawyers are going to, you know, what clients are going to follow you and which ones won't. And so do your homework and don't jump in impulsively. Do your homework.
Jim, you touched on this earlier just a bit, but how did you start in finding good clients, or how did they find you?
When I first started at Gibson Dunn in 1983, I was filled with entrepreneurial zeal, and I met with two very, very successful businessmen because I was concerned that maybe I didn't want to be a lawyer, maybe I wanted to go off into the business world. And they said, kid, anybody that could go to law school for 3 years, go to Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher is not particularly entrepreneurial. So, you know, keep your head down, be a lawyer, and get over yourself. And they said, the reason going to Gibson, Dunn was a good thing is, think about headhunters. They can pick up the phone and call somebody and in 5 minutes get a $1 million check. And life is all who you know. And so going to Gibson Dunn, whether or not you're there for a month or you're there for 20 years, and I was there for 9 years, is less important than kind of, quote, learning your craft and getting to know people. So at the end of the day, after being at Gibson Dunn for 9 years and after being at Catt & Knutson, which is another national firm, for 5 years, after 14 years of contacts, I had people to call when I went out on my own.
Uh-huh. I love it. How important are ethics in running a successful law firm?
Well, without putting politics on the table, I suppose it depends on who you ask.
Right.
From my perspective, they're very important, but that's because I want to look in the mirror and like what I see in the morning. I know people that make good livings that are not ethical. But on the other hand, from my perspective, you know, what goes around comes around. And at the end of the day, I don't feel we are serving our clients well if we're unethical. We're not serving our maker if we're not ethical. And we're not serving ourselves if we're not ethical. And so at the end of the day, you know, Shakespeare said, take all the lawyers and throw them to the bottom of the ocean. From my perspective, we have an opportunity to set an example and serve people, or we have an opportunity to be, you know, someone that lowers our profession. And so from my perspective, ethics are extremely important.
Mm-hmm. Jim, what have you found are some of the characteristics of the successful leaders in law firms?
I would say that hard work and consistency are the most important. And you noticed, again, I didn't say ethics in the sense that there are people presumably that make a good living that yell at their employees and they probably overbill and do things, although often that catches up with them. There are probably examples of people where they do get away with it. But I don't think there's any shortcut when it comes to hard work and consistency, at least if you're not going to be, quote, the person putting an ad on the 405 freeway that says slip and fall, call me. If you're going, as I said, go back to the heart surgery analogy, I always have been a marketing-oriented lawyer, and I always did more than the next guy. But I looked around after being a lawyer for 10 or 15 years, and I realized that those people that really were good, hardworking lawyers were actually more successful than I was. And I scratched my head and said, now, wait a second. I'm this really marketing-oriented lawyer. I'm a smart lawyer. I'm a good lawyer. But why is it, quote, this other lawyer has more business than me? And the answer is because of the tortoise and the hare. At the end of the day, you can start out with flashy marketing, fancy business cards, great office, take a lot of people to dinner, take a lot of people to lunch, and you can sometimes even get work that way. But whether or not you get repeat business is whether or not you, quote, exceed a client's expectations. People go out of their way when they're paying large legal bills to come back and or refer their friends when you've exceeded their expectations. Not met, exceeded. You cannot do that without hard work and consistency.
So on the flip side, what are easy mistakes that people make when they're trying to lead a law firm?
I think seeing people as commodities and not treating people with respect. I think it's looking for shortcuts. I don't think there are shortcuts. I think that it's over-promising and underperforming, and it's essentially not taking the time to control a client's expectations, because you can't exceed someone's expectations if you've over-promised. So I think people often under-communicate and miss, you know, deadlines. There are certain things I learned from Gibson Dunn that I think are priceless. One, you always return a phone call the same day. And number two, Frank Weed, who was one of my mentors at Gibson Dunn, said to me, you check a name three times. Once, twice, three times. Tracy, people do not want their names pronounced wrong, and they don't want them spelled wrong. And people have egos, and people want to be seen. And if they're paying you X dollars an hour, and you don't spell their name right, it doesn't go over well. So, and they don't want you calling them back 3 days later because they realize they're not important. People want to feel important. They want to know they matter. And at the end of the day, the mistake people make is they see people as a commodity, and they get arrogant or they get complacent, and they don't pay attention to the little things. I'll give you one other thing that I learned at Gibson Dunn, which I thought was extremely important, and that is when you go into a meeting and somebody's paying thousands of dollars for an answer, there are no problems, there are only challenges. And when you go into that meeting, you say to them, when you don't know what the heck you're talking about, those are excellent questions. We will get answers for you. We're in this together. We will work this out. You don't start sweating. You act like Sully landing that airplane on the Hudson. You exercise grace under pressure. And, again, I've had an amazing opportunity to work with people like Patty Glaser, who is not only consistent, hardworking, extremely bright, but she does all of that, and then she goes out to dinner at the end of the day, and it doesn't matter if the client is a peer or the client is a first-year lawyer. Patty is genuinely interested in that person and their life and asks meaningful questions. And so even though she's probably one of the top five lawyers in the world, she cares about people. And she works hard, she's consistent, and she cares about the little person. And those types of things make all the difference in the world.
Jim, how did you define or create your firm's culture at Baratroff?
One of my heroes is a guy named Stephen Covey, who wrote a book called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And I felt like the principles that he had been teaching in business school that he was trying to kind of get businesses to follow were things that I thought could be utilized in a law firm setting. And so thinking win-win, starting out with his principles of first seek to understand and then be understood, and essentially most of the principles we're talking now about, balance, synergy, think win-win, think out of the box, all of those things come from that book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
What do you think has made Baratroff so successful?
Hard work, consistency, and following the 7 Habits of the Highly Effective People.
I love it. Sweet and simple, right?
Yes. Okay. Keep it simple.
Are there any final words of wisdom you would like to share with our other attorneys who might be either starting their own firm or maybe they already have one and they're in a little bit of trouble looking for some help?
There are no dumb questions. Be willing to learn from everyone, whether or not it's the person in the elevator or it's a mentor like Patty Glaser. Surround yourself with the best and the brightest like John Kennedy did, and essentially have the humility to ask questions and know what you don't know, and to have the confidence to go for it. But I am only as good as the people that work for me, and I did figure out a while ago that having hardworking, extremely bright, dedicated, ethical people around me makes me effective. I am absolutely only as effective as the team I have, and I think that if you look around, I have traded up, and I would not substitute anyone in for one of the people that work with me because they're part of my family and they make me look good. And so you literally are only as good as the people you associate yourself with. So if you look around and there's a weak link in your team, that's a problem. And there is no I in team. You have to build the right team.
A special thanks to my guest, Attorney Jim Baer of Baer & Troth LLP with offices in Brentwood and Pasadena, California, as well as Jim is also of counsel at Glaser Weil. Jim, if someone would like to reach out to you with their legal matters, what is the best way to reach you?
I would say that the best way to reach me is one of two ways. They can email me at jim@bearttroth.com, or they can email me at jbear@glaserweil.com, or they can call our office 310-802-4200, and that would be the easiest way to get in touch with me.
All righty. Thank you so much for your time today, Jim. I wish you a good one.
Thank you, Tracy.
You've been listening to the Secrets of Attorney Marketing podcast from Speakeasy Marketing. Call 888-225-8594 or email rj@speakeasymarketinginc.com to enhance your reputation and outmarket your competitors. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and post a review.